You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Go Plug Yourself. We've been talking to awesome people in Montreal since 2011. Just a friendly reminder that if you're going to be buying anything on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, go to 9to5.cc first and click the links at the bottom or in the sidebar so that we get a bit of that money. Also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and enjoy the show.
Go plug yourself. You plug in mother plugger. Go plug yourself.
Walter, I don't understand how this episode's going to start because you're not talking. You're very quiet. Still being quiet.
I haven't watched Raw yet this week.
Okay.
So I don't have...
Do you have anything to talk? I heard that the Shield Cody Rhodes episode... Shield Cody Rhodes...
I actually did read what happens, so I know what happens.
Okay, so you know what happens. Big
wrestling fan, Shane?
I wouldn't say that I follow wrestling, but I did used to regularly go to some wrestling shows that I really quite enjoyed. It's fantastic entertainment.
That's cool, like big league wrestling?
I've never been to a big show. It was,
like indie wrestling?
IWS, International
IWS is great. I love that.
Yeah.
We've had some IWS people on this show.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
Yeah.
We need to, speaking of.
And then one of them killed a woman.
Yeah, he's doing jail time for that.
Yeah,
it was
awful.
That was kind of rough.
It was really shocking. I saw him perform.
I don't think he killed another wrestler.
No, he killed
his girlfriend, I believe.
Town, something like that.
Yeah, and apparently was super, I don't even know. I guess we can sort of talk about this.
That's not.
No, I'm just saying, but apparently it was super awkward because he wrestled after the murder also. He had a show after doing a murder. Like
he hadn't been charged yet.
Yeah, he hadn't been charged yet, but the murder had already been committed.
Yeah. So today's guest is Shane Grin.
Hi guys.
Who never murdered anyone.
I have not murdered anybody.
For real.
For real.
He's fake murdered people.
He does.
I'm sure I fake murdered people in the past.
Yeah.
You do everything, and everyone knows you.
Something
is that
like
a fair assessment?
I think that's pretty fair.
Right.
So let's wrap this episode up. Shane knows everyone. does everything.
Have a good night.
All right. Goodbye.
I've seen, but like,
you're here though for Halloween reason, but I was like, only by like
it's
by
a Halloween reason.
It's a dressing up and costume thing, which in Montreal is a big Halloween deal.
Yeah. although, I was like, I think it's only Halloween for locals.
This is
like,
good. This is definitely our Halloween episode.
This is definitely our Halloween episode because you're the
producer and musical director of Richard O'Brien's The Rocky Horror Show going up at Mainline Theater from October 23rd to the 26th.
October 20 what to the what?
October 23rd to the 26th.
23rd to the 26th. That'll be next week because this is going up on October the 17th. So you have 1 week to get your tickets. I've seen this.
So you are not Richard O'Brien.
I am not Richard O'Brien. Richard,
that's confusing for me.
Yeah, he was in Dark City, one of the creepy
really?
Guys.
Really?
Yeah.
He was one of the aliens?
Well, yeah, one of the aliens. Yeah, he's a fantastic actor, very, very
and
talented.
And Richard O'Brien is the original Riff Raff, is he not?
He's the original Riff Raff in both the London and LA performances and in the movie.
You've done this a few years, right?
Okay,
or at least you've been
back,
involved with it for a few years.
Absolutely. This is my second year producing the Rocky Horror Show, and just to clarify, this is the stage play, the musical that we're talking about.
The word picture's not in it.
The word picture is not in it.
There are no pictures, there's only actors.
No relation to the film, but there's a tremendous relation to the film. It's just a different show. It's not the, as you know, every year in Montreal there's a tradition of the big movie, the picture show with a cast on the floor acting at least on stage.
Often emceed by a friend of the show, Plastic Patrick. So.
Exactly. he's been emceeing for as long as I can remember, since at least the late 90s.
I'm going to go out and say that I recommend to our listeners that you do both.
Yeah, do both.
They are
different.
They're very different. They're very very different experiences because they're like I've done the picture show in costume and I've done the show not in costume. But I mean, I guess people could probably come out in costume also to the show.
People do, yeah. Especially on our closing night. We don't encourage people to throw things because we are in a small space with lots of dancers, and we don't want them slipping on rice and breaking their ankles.
Yeah, live actors and
exactly.
Projectiles.
I was like throwing toast at a TV at a computer screen, not a big deal. Like throwing
Throwing toast at people.
At a computer screen?
Throwing toast at a
tap
dance.
Is your tradition just watching Rocky Horror Picture Show by yourself?
But doing all the callbacks
doing all this stuff
and all
like
the
throwing shit at your computer.
Gun right at the computer screen.
You go through a computer every year.
Toast right at the... Oh, I get an old computer, and I put myself in a room by myself. I get all my props ready. I, of course, put on a Teddy and a lacy underwear, and then I do all the things by myself.
Golden bathing suit.
Exactly. Why is that weird?
Now, Shane, do you actually have a role in this, or are you in the cast?
I am playing in the band. We do have a five-piece live band to play the music that accompanies the show. It really is like a musical theater production with eight dancers and a cast of like 11 or 12 or something. I can't count.
I've never actually seen the live show.
I recommend it. If you're like me and you've seen the movie, I had seen the movie several years in a row before actually being involved in a production of the play in about 2002 was the first time I'd been involved in a live production. And as much as I love the film, there are certain elements of the story that aren't exactly clear. Like, basically, the entire second half of the film.
The second half of the movie is very murky.
I thought you were going to be like, basically, the entirety of the movie from when they pull over in the rain to a certain point where some people go to space.
From when the lips start singing to you at the very beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's a lot
there's
that happens
holes.
In the film. There are some holes. There's definitely some holes, and I think those holes are actually really filled in by the play. Some of the story elements, the plot elements, are a little more clear. The character intentions
can,
are a little
can you give
more
an example?
Well, for one thing, character-wise, Dr. Frankenfurter in the play is much less of a sympathetic anti-hero. In the film, you really do come to adore him and love him, and it's kind of tragic when he's killed at the end. In the play, he really makes it clear that he's an unrepentant bastard and deserves to die.
Yeah, I don't even know if that was intentional on the film's part, or so much as it might have just been, like,
he's
a betrayal.
Just too Tim Curry is just too fabulous to hate.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, all of his dialogue and his actions, and, like, if you delivered them in a certain way, you'd be like, oh, this guy's a remorseless fucking monster.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a great one-liner at the end. Basically, what happens is Columbia proverbially takes a bullet for him, or literally takes a laser beam, a beam of pure antimatter, as I recall, and saves his life. And he has this emotional moment of, did you do this for me? And she's like, uh-huh. He's like, silly bitch, and drops her. Yeah. And like, okay, so now it's a little more clear. It makes sense that we're going to kill you because you really deserve it.
Right.
And there's a couple other things as well that Rocky... he has a speaking role.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, Rocky himself is like completely almost like brushed under the carpet in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You're like, who's this guy?
And the
I
reason
guess
he's for
gone.
That, yeah, the reason for that is that was the bodybuilder that they could find, couldn't speak English, so they had him.
Is that true?
That's true. He does not speak English. He lip-synced the lyrics that were sung by somebody else, which is why, if you watch the movie, his lines, he's kind of weird and echoey because he was recorded at a different
it's all
time.
All AVR stuff. Like,
were
yeah.
there no American bodybuilders in the 70s?
Well, they shot the film in London.
Really?
Yeah.
Were there no...
Oh, not London, sorry. It was in the UK. I can't remember which town it was.
No bodybuilders in the UK.
Yeah, none at all.
Because that's the whole Conan thing, right? They were like, look at this fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger guy. We're going to put him in this movie, and oh, fuck, he can't even deliver lines.
Well, I think bodybuilding was probably a lot less popular then than it is now. I mean, keep in mind, this movie is from 1975.
Or... But even if it was popular, I can, like... Like, there's almost no crossover into acting. Like, there's, like... Yeah. There's nothing... There's, like, other than posing, there's really no performance aspect to bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Which is just sort of like, I can pose, can you deliver a line? No. Yeah, like, so, why would I have to? I'm posing.
There's a few elements in the play that I think clear up some of what's going on in the movie. So it's definitely worth seeing. I mean, there's such different experiences that I do recommend.
As band director, do you get to do any, like... Is there any like moments where you're like, oh, the band director got a fun line, or are you just in the band?
I'm in the band. I'm playing guitar and I sing a bit of backup.
Okay.
The one fun moment, I think my favorite moment from last year was the criminologist who's hosting the show, the one who comes on, who in the film was played by Charles Gray slash Blofeld, the man with no neck, etc.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's being portrayed by local comedian and improviser Dan Dirksen.
Dan's doing that this year?
Yeah,
Dan was in it last year, was he
Dan
not?
Dan was in it last year, he's doing it again this year.
But did it was Dan the same role last year?
Yeah, same role, and he is fantastic.
We've had Dan on the show, right?
Yeah, friend of the show, Dan Dirksen.
Yeah, absolutely. And closing night, as a one-liner, one-liner at the end of the show, the second to last song, Superheroes.
Yeah.
There's a line where he's saying, you know, lost in time and lost in space, an obvious nod to, you know, paying homage to the TV series from the 60s, the sci-fi camp stuff. And so he delivers the line as lost in time and everybody loves Raymond. And at that moment, I quickly, because we had some time in the music, I turned to the other backup singer who's with me doing the harmonies, and I'm like, quick, sing the word Raymond. And both of us just like fill out the line where we don't use it, meaning Raymond. And it was just this fun little moment.
Just yeah. Killed the audience.
Yeah, I think
probably.
That was going to be...
Dan is possibly like one of the, I'd say one of the best, maybe like theatrical, funny people on the scene.
I love the guy like a brother.
Like theater comedy crossover.
Yeah,
for sure. And certainly, like, if you watch his comedy, like, he's prone to theatrics.
Yeah. And his voice carries so well. Like.
Speaking of his voice, this past Saturday, I did a live recording of a radio play, an old-time radio play with him.
That's awesome.
A monthly event that we're going to be doing. And he'd also done three with me in the past on CKOT.
Right.
Something else that we produced with the Fringe Festival.
See, this is what I mean now. This gets back to my initial point that you do, in fact, do everything.
I do everything, and I know everyone.
Our paths have crossed just on so many different... For so many different reasons, different projects.
At different events. Yeah, we met at the Fringe Festival. We met at Fantasia.
I think it was the first time. Yeah. And my girlfriend knows you. When, you know, Catherine, right?
Yeah,
it's funny because when, excuse me, my fiance.
Fiance.
My financier.
Financier? Financial backer.
She says, she heard me mention that you're going to be on the podcast, and she's like, seriously, though, you know how every once in a while I mention Shane, and you're always like, who the fuck is Shane? She's like, this is Shane. I'm like, oh, yeah. Of course, I don't actually ever remember her mentioning Shane, but apparently she does from time to time, because you guys knew each other back in the day.
Some unnamable time ago.
Probably CJ. I imagine. That's where I know him from.
Yeah.
In the before time.
But yeah, so like, and you do a bunch of Fringe stuff, and now you're involved. I think you're also last time I saw you performing, you were at Wiggle Room.
Yep. Dan as well does World Improv Federation there. Yeah. I'm playing there this Thursday, the 17th, as part of World Improv Federation.
So tonight. If you're sitting here listening to this podcast on the day it drops tonight.
Yeah, tonight.
And you're not doing anything. I guess finish listening to the podcast, or just hop on a metro like while you're listening to it. Just
it's a podcast. You could take it with you. Pause it when the show starts.
Yeah, or not.
Put it back on in the intermission because you're antisocial.
Okay, good. I like that. Or just don't pause it during. Just listen to Shane talk while you see him and be like, stereo Shane. But he's doing different things. He's talking in your ears and performing on stage.
Exactly.
I'm gonna make this happen. Tomorrow.
Make it happen. You're gonna come. You're gonna come tonight to the Wiggle Room.
Tonight. So, I know Shane. We pretended to be vampires together in Sejep.
In this very bar.
In Grumpy's.
Yeah.
I wish that surprised me. I really do.
It's a true thing. In the back of Grumpy's bar, we both pretended to be vampires in Montreal's largest Vampire the Masquerade LARP. You shake your head and you're
I'm just really amazed you particularly, I'm talking to Keith now for the record, had sex with more than two women, like, people in your life.
Hey, Walter, how many wrestling t-shirts do you own?
We can see him counting.
Still counting.
Still counting. He's crinkling.
40?
How far have you driven to go see a wrestling show?
You see, that's not fair, though.
Okay, but...
You know what?
If we're going to make fun of me pretending to be a vampire, we're going to make fun of you driving for 10 hours to go see WrestleMania.
I just want to bring these things together, because we're talking about, like, the crossover between different scenes, and Walter and I have met in different places, and you and I met in the LARP gaming scene with the vampires. When I was young, I never got into wrestling. It, like, to me, it was like, whatever, it's fake, I don't care, I'm not even into sports.
Right.
And it just wasn't a thing, and I didn't get it. And then... You know, I kind of fell in with the bad crowd, i.e. people who thought they were vampires.
That's the pretend bad crowd.
and at some point I realized, like, the good
crowd LARP with, like, foam swords, the right. Bad crowd LARP with vampires.
Exactly.
It's two LARPing crowds.
So at some point I realized, like, half of these people are involved in the theater community in some way.
Surprise.
And another half are huge wrestling fans. I'm thinking, wait a minute, there must be something here. So a few mutual friends of ours had, like, organized a trip to go out and and see like one of those pay-per-view at a bar wrestling shows. Yeah. So I tagged along. I was like, oh, hey. So yeah. Wrestling is more like theater than sports.
Yeah.
And it's just like hella awesome entertainment and a soap opera.
Yeah, well, so. and it's like...
And stunts.
It's like sketch combat.
Yeah, it's sketch combat. It's guys doing incredible stunts that you know are fake but are still impressive and painful anyway.
Yeah.
That's often real blood.
Yeah.
And melodrama.
Yeah, there's a whole I think appreciation of like a theatrical appreciation of wrestling that like people who are into wrestling are into it but they won't necessarily acknowledge that they're like actually watching a theatrical soap opera, whatever. Like, I'm a big fan of like in-ring storytelling. So like mic work is one thing. So like yeah, we're talking on the mic and we're doing a bit and trying to get it across, but it's like, but the guy like selling the hatred in his eyes in the fake fight and all that stuff. And you're like, this is the best, or like, where I was like, he can't believe he tapped out, and it's like there's so much like theatrical over the top performance that goes on.
And the double crossing.
Yeah, exactly, and backstabbing and all that stuff, and that's the good part.
Strangely, I'm actually going to drive this conversation away from wrestling right now.
Okay.
Right?
I'm confused.
Nice. I just wanted to mention...
Walter pulls off his mask and he's fucking that guy from inside the actor's studio. Like, fuck, it's not Walter, it's that guy.
What would you say is your favorite curse word? No. I know another cool thing you were involved in recently... was the live musical accompaniment for the screening
Silent
of Phantom of the Phantom of the Opera
1925 Lon Chaney Phantom.
Yeah, with for Phil Sprill's Film Society.
Exactly.
And that happened a couple of weekends ago.
Yep.
And so what was the deal there? You actually composed the new piece or?
Okay, most of it, and I'm going to be honest, when I do that sort of thing, it's been a few times that I've done silent movie accompaniments, there's a lot of improv that goes into it. Because composing something that perfectly matches a film and like that you're going to play and always get at the same length and hit all your cues, it's extremely laborious, it's extremely time-consuming, and it's also not traditionally how a lot of these films were done. Some of them had composed scores that would be sent around from pianist to pianist. Oftentimes, the musicians, the accompanists, would pull on a library of music cues and say, like, oh, there's a romantic scene, play romantic music number two, or action scene number three, and they just basically pull from their usual charts of musical accompaniment.
Yeah.
So what I did for that one is, because I had a couple other musicians with me, an opera singer and a cellist, I'd composed a few small pieces for the cellist so that I could slip from the piano to the church organ.
Right.
So that she could fill out that space and to let me sneak around the screen. And the opera singer, we pulled some songs from her repertoire that we thought fit the mood and the tone of where we were placing it in the film.
Are you guys going to be doing any more of this?
Absolutely, absolutely. We don't have any dates specified yet.
Well, you've been doing... Where did you do it?
At the Westmount United Church.
Yeah,
right?
Westmount Park United Church, the Mesnove by Lansdowne. And I've done a couple before. There was Charlie Chaplin's The Circus and Buster Keaton's The General are the two other features.
You weren't involved with Nosferatu last year?
I was involved on the production end, but not on the artistic side.
Right. Yeah, but so like perform, like doing the music and
I
stuff?
I didn't perform, no.
Now, I got to tell you, my favorite, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on this podcast. I feel like I might have.
Maybe.
But one of my favorite musical accompaniments to any, reimagined musical accompaniment to any silent film. I own...
The 80s version of Metropolis.
No. I have a DVD copy of the original Nosferatu, and the musical accompaniment is entirely... death metal band type O negative.
Wow.
Type O negative. You know type O negative?
Yeah.
Type O negative. And also there's an introduction by David Carradine.
Whatever.
Go figure.
Yeah.
No, that's good. I feel that we should.
So that's something, I'm just saying, maybe at some point.
Branching out.
Learn a few type O negative songs.
Maybe. Yeah, definitely.
Go up to Phil Sprill and be like, I got an idea.
I'm going to do you one better. Taking movies that are not silent, playing them silently, still accompanying them with music, candidate number one, They Live.
Yeah.
Just do a musical.
That almost plays like a silent movie,
yeah, exactly.
Actually.
I feel that like all of They Live like all the.
You ever seen They Live, Shane?
I have not. I should.
Excellent.
It was with Rowdy Roddy Piper. It was with Rowdy Roddy Piper, but
I feel that I shouldn't admit not having seen this.
You really should. I think it's even on Netflix at this point.
It might be.
I have no excuse not to see it.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's actually quite good. Like, there are some ridiculous moments, yeah, but it's actually fucking really good.
I want to take what you just said and bring this back to the Rocky Horror Show, but what? Specifically, I'm going to tie this in.
Fuck you.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show is often, I find, misunderstood as something that people think is so bad it's good.
Right.
And I think seeing the play kind of clarifies where a lot of the humor is, and you realize it's like, yes, all those awkward pauses between lines, those are there on purpose because they're satirizing the style of campy sci-fi films from the 50s and 60s.
Right.
There's a lot of humor and a lot of jokes that are missed because people think it's sincere because there's that much that went into crafting the film. Like, well, the whole, like, you know, Janet, Brad, Janet, Rocky, like, that whole loop, that's totally played up for the comic.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that, like, Rocky, like, suffers from is the fact that, like, the people that are watching it aren't from the 70s. So, yeah, like, in our brains, we're like, it's old! They're so zany! But you're like, no, that's like a play off of the 50s.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like, that the whole, like, Brad, Janet, be my girl, fucking, like, put on the bomber jacket and give you the class pin thing wasn't really happening in the 70s anymore.
Not
that
at all.
Was
it
like
was
a,
over.
It's like how you and you, like, I had the same thing where, growing up, I only realized that, like, Happy Days wasn't contemporary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know?
You know, I was talking about this the other day, sort of with Little House on the Prairie, because when I was
I think so. I think when I was a kid, I thought that was, like, old as shit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. When westerns were just filmed in the Old West.
Yeah.
Because I grew up on black and white TV when I was really young, and we used to watch Little House on the Prairie in black and white, so I just assumed that it was filmed in black and white, and then years later I saw it in color. I'm like, what?
Do you think people, like, 20 years from now will think that 70s show was done in the 70s?
Probably.
Possibly. Like, when you're, like, watching, like, 2030-something, and you're like, that 70s show is probably, like, the fucking 70s.
What about WKRP? Was that set contemporary, or was that going back a few?
I think
KRP was set in the... It was filmed in the late 70s, and set in the... It was, like, contemporary piece.
Contemporary.
Because,
yeah,
like, you had, like, stoner DJs and shit, yeah, like, so...
Yeah. And Venus Flytrap.
That is, I think, more documentary than sitcom.
Yeah.
That's how I viewed it.
Yeah.
Dave Fisher on CJD says that a lot.
Greatly disappointed that WKRP was not a real station. And that Cincinnati was not a real city.
They never dropped turkeys from helicopters.
As God is my witness.
They never dropped turkeys out of the helicopter.
Oh, anyway, so this has been Go Plug Deja Vu.
Go Plug and Comedy Gold.
Comedy Gold.
Deja Vu and Comedy Gold on your low cable subscriber.
Come see the Rocky Horror Show. Antonio Bavaro is a fantastic drag queen performer. He's the one playing Dr. Frankenfurter.
Who's that again? Say that again.
Antonio Bavaro.
Okay.
Who you might have seen at the Fringe Festival playing Hedwig. In Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Okay, all right.
Fantastic talent.
Was he also in a production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch maybe like a couple years ago out at the Olympia? Is that possible?
You know what? I'm not sure.
All right, I don't know.
Tell you, but he definitely was in a production of the Fringe Festival.
So here's another question I have about the play. Is the Meatloaf character, is that in the play or not?
Oh, yeah. That's Eddie.
Eddie, yeah.
And that's actually something, there's a few lines that clarify, it's more clear that Eddie was like the first science project.
As opposed to just busting in on a motorcycle,
exactly,
spinning around and leaving?
Exactly. he was his first ever, and that it was supposed to be the man that he wanted for himself as a delivery boy that they suckered in to steal his brain, but then he wound up falling in love with Columbia, and Frank got jealous, and that's kind of why he killed
him. Yeah, I mean, I think that, is that... Like, I feel like that's sort of touched on, but, like, in the song, and it's very, like, quickly...
It's very glossed over.
Yeah, it's like... Nah, 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 and you're like, hey! And then he's just dead, and you're like, all right, over. But, yeah, so he's an actual person in the play.
Absolutely.
Want to do 5 questions, Walter?
Yeah.
Yeah!
Did you guys steal this from Craig Kilburn?
No, because it's different. There are still 5 questions,
right.
And this is all fucked up because you already know your 5th question. You've already asked it.
Did I ask this of myself?
No. You asked this of a person in the future, but chronologically.
But then it became me. Oh, we'll see.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So yeah, your 5th question is already locked in. We know what it is. We're gonna fucking be psychics on this. So it's 3 questions that are the same 3 questions to every guest. Then it's a
pretend like you don't know what your question is as you're asking.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, pretend like you think about it for a second.
I'm explaining the fucking rules, and it's going to come clear to him what we asked of him yesterday. So, 3 questions are the same question every guest. The 4th question, which is asked to you from our previous guest.
Yeah.
And then the fifth question is a question asked to our next guest. But because we're recording these out of chronology, because we want to get your
episode. Remember when we were chatting yesterday, and I was like, come up with a question.
I know.
Yeah, we want to get your episode up before your show. So we recorded an episode yesterday that's coming
pro,
out later.
Because we're pros, Shane. We're fucking pros.
I get it. I'm not nervous anymore.
Exactly. So now it all
makes sense. Still be nervous, though.
First question, Walter.
What was your dad's favorite Halloween costume in the 40s? Shoot. That's not the question.
Not the first question, but answer it anyway.
I don't think my dad was born in the 40s.
It's always G.I. Joe. The answer is always G.I. Joe.
Always G.I. Joe. That's a freebie. All right. Mulligan. First question is, what is your favorite drink?
It's a third question. But
what was
first.
Your favorite childhood toy?
Oh, he's got it.
What was my favorite childhood toy?
Yeah, yes.
Toy or
like all of Star Wars count?
All yes. of Star Wars?
Do you have like the
give a
figurine?
Thing, a particular
like,
thing?
All of them. I mean, if I had to choose, probably the AT-ST Scout Walker.
It was a pretty good Scout Walker.
Yeah.
I was, like, I always thought that the, like, AT-ATs would have done a lot better on Endor than the Scout Walkers, because the Scout Walkers could apparently be taken out by Ewoks.
Yeah, yeah. They did have a couple, as far as I remember, but they weren't involved in the battle.
But they weren't involved in the battle. I was like, why didn't you send in the fucking unstoppable AT-ATs? Nope, you sent in your cardboard AT-STs.
Yeah, exactly.
You idiots. So yeah, the walker, you had the walker, and did it fit a, man, did it fit a little man inside?
It did. It
cool.
Did. Yeah.
Did you, and how often
although,
was it
I gotta say, I think my favorite rebels? Actual figure would have been the TIE fighter pilot, like with the black outfit. Those guys were
yeah, mad. Like yeah. like the ones that like accompanied Vader. Like the, because you rarely see them in the cockpit. It's really only in that fight where you see them a lot.
Exactly.
Like Vader's
exactly.
buddies who are like.
And like you see a few getting ready to
yeah.
go into ships and stuff.
I think their most screen time is the Vader gang.
Yeah. But just Star Wars toys in general. That was like a big thing in our family. Of like we'd go to garage sales. And
fair.
Like
I think
Star
that's
Wars.
What 10 points? Is that worth 10 points?
Is a point system now?
Could be.
Sure.
All right.
Now there is.
Second question. Was Walter's first question.
I'm giving it 8 points.
Favorite
for the record.
Drink.
What's your favorite drink, Shane?
Cocktail or...
Favorite drink. Could be alcoholic, non-alcoholic, could be a beer. What's your favorite bevy?
What is your favorite fucking drink?
That's kind of putting
come
me on
Shane,
the spot.
Get it together.
I think it's really moody. Right now, I'm drinking a delicious Samboise oatmeal stout. And that was actually my nickname at the Fringe Festival a couple years ago when we had beer nicknames.
Oatmeal
stout?
So
I'd have to say, yeah, it's definitely my favorite beer.
I'm a apricot guy.
Apricot's lovely. It's yeah. So refreshing on a summer day.
So good.
But I mean, I find that with apricot, you can really only have the one.
No.
No.
No, I've never found that to be the case.
No.
No. So, see, but what's your, that's what you're drinking now, which is not at all what we asked. What's your favorite drink, though?
You're on death row.
I'm totally on death row.
You're on death row, and they're like, you get a one.
You know what, I'll just
a glass
gonna,
of something.
I'm gonna be classic. I'm gonna say a gin and tonic, but like with good gin. And
good gin.
Define a good gin.
Bombay Saff or up.
Bombay Saff is not a good gin.
You said or up.
Nope.
I said or up.
Negative 6 points.
Oh.
Kin's a bit of a gin snob.
Gin snob.
Kin?
I don't know.
Kin's not here.
Kin is not here. We have a
Kin's a bit of a Steve job. Kin's a bit
Kin's
of a
Steve Jobs.
Of a G snob.
Yeah, I am a bit of a gin snob, but sadly this puts you at 4 points.
Had a bit of an aneurysm just there.
You had a chance to win there. If you had said Tanqueray or up, that would have been acceptable.
Kin's a bit of a G...
Kin's a bit of a G-force. Kin's a bit of a G-man. What?
I'm not going to talk for the rest of this episode.
Can you just do me a favor and, like, raise both your arms ahead of you?
Why?
I want to know if you're having a stroke.
I'm good.
Okay.
Say the alphabet backwards.
7, 6. All right.
What?
Moving on.
Do you like sevens with the little? Do you like sevens with the line or not?
I used to do that when I was
sevens
a kid, but then
line,
somebody told me there's a French.
Zeros with line.
Do you know
also.
What I'm talking about? What?
Yeah, the little yeah, like
cross, cross the seven.
Yeah,
you know
totally
how some people cross their zeds.
I sometimes cross my zeds, not consistently.
You curse
but I cross
zed?
My sevens and I cross my zeros also.
Crossing, I often cross my zeros.
Yeah. I used to do.
It is said, clear that this is a zero.
I used to do like a seven with a top serif and a cross.
Yeah, that's the
yeah.
fanciest.
Yeah,
that's the badass.
It took me 3 minutes to draw the letter seven as a child.
The best seven is the seven gun from 007.
I agree.
Everybody wrote like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, seven gun.
Or the seven from The Sopranos, where the R is no, that's an R actually.
All
right, next
or
question.
Or the movie 7.
The backward 7 from the movie 7.
Right?
Oh, no, it's a V.
It's
sorry,
a V.
It's the letter sorry, it's the letter 7 instead of the V.
Yeah,
instead of the V, because I never understood that
it's
one.
It's a 7.
It's a, all right. Seven. All right. Okay. Where the hell? What question are we at?
It's question...
Question 6.
Question
7.
7.
Or question V.
4 points, I believe, is Shane's current score on this.
Which is a record high, I might add.
It is a record high.
This is the first time Keith has arbitrarily attributed points.
Attributed points. Without thinking too much, what was your best time ever? Thinking too much.
I went to Brazil in 2010 to participate in the festival of Metro Musicians. It was the Red Bull had organized a festival called Soundground in Sao Paulo, Brazil,
Okay. Featuring
Metro Musicians, and I got invited to play there. And so I spent a solid 10 days in Sao Paulo, and it was just an incredible life-changing experience. And I think what was most incredible about it is that I've traveled a bit in Canada and a little bit in the U.S., and I find I honestly had more culture shock visiting Halifax than I did visiting Sao Paulo, because I found when I got there, there's such a common vibe between Montreal and Sao Paulo that people are just on the same wavelength.
Cool.
It's just, it was absolutely beautiful. And like, you know, fresh fruit and yogurt every day for breakfast, and I could not describe how good the quality of beef was there. It's like even the like worst cut of like it's been sitting on a heater for like the last 3 hours at a buffet and it's all dried up still tastes better than like the best steak I had in Edmonton.
Crazy. Yeah. So the fourth question is asked by comedians Vlad Levitt and Mike Carrazza.
I'm totally confused now because I thought it was the last. Anyway,
no.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah, that is actually the fourth question.
Did they come out? Did they settle with one question?
Yeah, they settled on it, which is basically, what's your price? So, how much money would it take for you to stop doing what you love?
Wow.
So I guess in your case, music. So like.
No.
Mine's no. 10 grand.
10 G's.
No, I would not.
So are you seriously? Like,
I'm serious.
Someone's like, here's $10 billion and then whatever. And you're like, you just have to stop playing music.
No, fuck that. I would say no.
I'm an artist and I'm fucking here.
Okay, Shane.
Okay.
All right.
So today's Go Plug Yourself. Shane Grin was a liar.
Yeah. This is Go Plug Idealism with Shane Grin.
Here's another question. B part. Is there a sum?
There's no B part.
Is there a sum of money that it would take to make you sell out your music? Like, if it was just sort of.
Oh,
like,
I do sell out my music, like $20 an hour, and I will play crap. You know. Seriously.
Okay, so if I'm like, if I were to say hypothetically, be forming an NSYNC cover band with Keith Waterfield called N Keith. Where
you know
we're
Keith Waterfield? Keiths. You know Keith Waterfield?
I know Keith Waterfield, yeah.
You might need to also change your name to Keith, but you would do all the music. Is that, like, are you down?
If it pays.
$20 an hour, I heard.
I'd be the manager, so I wouldn't have to change my name to Keith.
Fair.
Unless you wanted to
I mean,
to sing.
I have done recording sessions and music work that I don't tell people about it because
okay,
that's...
Okay, that's your line.
Yeah.
But what if they were, like, part of it was putting your face on the cover?
It's a living, you know.
It's a living?
Yeah, I'd rather be doing
so you'd rather
work
be
that I dislike in my field than not working in my
than
field.
Than not working at all.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's really... You'd sell yourself out within your field for cheap.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't immediately remove your field for billions of dollars.
Exactly.
This is an interesting portrait of Shane Grin's psyche right here.
It is conflicted.
So, now, act like you just made this up. What question would you like to ask our future guest?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would think, I don't know. I guess in light of Neil deGrasse Tyson's tweet rage at Gravity, space is on my mind.
Where he did what now?
Neil deGrasse Tyson went on this like tweet rant about all this, or a bunch of science problems in that film Gravity with George Clooney and, was it Sandra Bullock? Either?
Yeah. Wait, no, Neil deGrasse Tyson often like...
Wait, he had issues with the movie Gravity?
Yeah.
Yes, in that science
but, like,
isn't.
He's not crazy, but he's slightly crazy. But,
He's awesome,
the Titanic Sky thing, I don't know if you know about this.
I don't know about Titanic Sky.
So, the sky was wrong in Titanic.
Oh, like it didn't match the actual data?
Like,
I
think it was, like, the Southern Hemisphere or whatever. Like, they just, like, had a fucking...
Like a beautiful sunset
like
or something?
Like a sky map. when they're, like, I guess drowning and all that stuff. And he was like, there's...
Oh, the stars.
Yeah, the stars.
Oh,
and
wow.
He's like, there's no way that sky is, like, over the northern thing. And the crazy part, though, is they fixed it for the remastered version.
Oh, this is incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what they did?
It was either that it was the... It might have been either the side. No. I think it might have been the northern hemisphere, but backwards.
Like, yeah, they just put the side of...
They put the screen wrong. Like, they just literally reversed the sky when they were just like, bleh. Like, just,
that's funny.
So yeah,
things we've learned from this conversation. James Cameron is Neil deGrasse Tyson's bitch.
Pretty much. Honestly, like, talking about accuracy of science and science fiction movies. Say what you want about how terribly written and pretty much racist Avatar is. The science was spot on.
Honestly, what about unobtainium? That pissed me off.
It's a superconducting material. Like, if
it felt like
something
a MacGuffin. I said it felt like a MacGuffin.
It feels like a MacGuffin, but if you think about it, like, I mean, obviously there's some kind of necessary suspension of disbelief, but if you say this is a material that is a room temperature superconductor,
right,
then everything else makes sense.
Yeah, there's like a bunch
like
of sides.
Floating mountains make sense because you have a room temperature superconductor and the magnetic fields will be strong enough. Anyway, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I remember seeing him not long ago on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and he sits down and the first thing he says is like, your globe is rotating backwards. And they actually fixed it the next week.
Nice.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my question for the next guest that is space related.
We don't know who the next guest is.
I don't know who the next guest is at all. Whoever it might be.
Whoever it may be.
Would you...
Well, I'm sure we'll love this question.
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Would you take a one-way trip to Mars to be in the first wave of colonization / exploration?
Okay.
Like, knowing that there is no return from this trip because it'll take that long for people to get something there to actually bring people back, would you be part of the first wave who will go move to Mars and live there until you hopefully get old and die? Or... Okay.
So I know a little bit about this question.
Yeah, oh, really?
Why is that, Keith?
I actually know how long it would take to get to Mars, and it's not even that long.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I have a slight issue with we could never get back. Because it's 100. It's the fastest, depending on the escape trajectory, whatever, of the rocket and rocket thrusters. The fastest trip that they could take to Mars is 150 days. 355 would be the standard.
Then let's just say,
I feel that if you colonize Mars properly, you could build a rocket to come back if you wanted to.
Let's just say that the caveat is that you have to stay because you have to colonize, motherfucker, all right?
Yeah.
But I think if you were successful enough in colonizing, you could build a rocket back.
Well, I mean, like, getting to Mars is one thing. I mean, assuming you get there and you're fine, like, honestly, being able to transport something that can actually launch you back? I mean, like, you're basically putting a rocket that's large enough
to escape Mars. So answer your own question. Would you do
answer
it?
Answer my own question?
That's not a thing that we do.
We almost always do this.
Really?
Yep. You usually tuned out by now. These short episodes are really, you're up your alley. You're like, you're still with us.
Probably not.
Probably not?
I don't know
how to
go. No.
Was there anything that would make you go?
If they sent a recording studio with me.
So it's like a recording
studio. What if your shuttle in itself was a recording studio?
Well, I see no problem.
Nice. What if that meant that nobody except for the colonists of Mars would hear your music?
Huh.
Though we've lost 100,000
times. So it would be like only the colonists of Mars, but we don't have a way to get the music back to Earth.
Are there more than six of them? Because like they'd probably
eventually though. Like you would be the first music of Mars, right? Like so if the colonists
besides the spiders.
Yeah.
So but like you'd be the first music of Mars. So in the colony of Mars you probably would get to compose the Martian national anthem.
Spiders did that.
Stop it. Yeah, I know. But
no, I'm totally with Walter on this one.
So, but you could change it, though. No one would know.
Sure, the spiders from Mars stayed together after the whole Bowie thing. Did you know that? The actual band? Nobody knows about it, but they did.
You sure about that?
Yep.
Well, maybe they didn't put stay out together like, to this day.
No, I mean, like, Mick Ronson had some solo material, but after the spiders broke up, Ronson went on the Rolling Thunder review with Bob Dylan.
I feel like I'm gonna. No, I read a thing recently that there was at least one project they did as the Spiders sans Bowie.
Possibly. Do you think they were backing somebody else up? Or
I don't know.
Yeah.
Look this up if you're listening
to this.
Yeah. So I'm also a fan of the Rolling Thunder Review, so I'm sad that I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's on there.
One of my favorite live Dylan albums.
If you could check out, I think in the 80s, Ronson was also touring with Ian Hunter from Mott the Hoople.
You a big glam rock guy?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So this is how this episode ends.
Speaking of glam rock,
about glam rock.
That's the core. That's integral to what we're talking about, because the Rocky Horror Show is basically this fusion of camp 50s and 60s sci-fi with the glam rock movement of the early 70s and liberated sexuality and breaking down heteronormative conventions and basically like liberating gender
so
identity.
October 23rd to the 26th, how many shows?
23rd to the 26th, we're doing 5 shows.
30 shows.
30 shows in the span of 3 days.
Hours.
Your name's on this, Shane Grinn Productions.
That's me. You can get your tickets at mainlinetheater.ca or just give them a shout. Show up, buy your tickets in person. We're actually going to be giving away posters. If you want one of these beautiful posters of Antonio Bavaro looking all sexy and stuff,
is that your actual guy? That's not just like a model.
No, that is Antonio, and that's awesome. A photo by Andrea Hausman, who I just want to plug.
It's a good poster.
Awesome photographer.
So yeah, go check that out. Walter, you have something to plug real quick.
Oh yeah, and I probably shouldn't because it's conflicting with your thing, but it's at the same venue.
About a few nights.
It's at the same venue.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a second edition of a night fight talk show in a small space, which is going to run directly against the Friday showing. So
I'm sorry about the noise in advance.
I'm very sorry about the noise. You're not going to need to apologize to me. Trust me, that's not going to be an issue. Like it's going to really.
Wait, is there an early show that Friday?
There is. There's a good buddy of mine, Alex Guchar, who I'm going to quickly tie more things in. Alex is conducting and orchestrated a concert version of The Nightmare Before Christmas that's going up at Mainline Friday at 7 o'clock.
25th, yeah.
25th. Then he's doing a matinee on Saturday and an evening show on Sunday.
Because I'm going to book your weekend for you really quickly. You're going to go see Nightmare Before Christmas at the Mainline. Then you're going to go see Night Fight.
Then you're going to see Night Fight.
And go to the mini main. You're going to hear Rocky Horror, maybe, and be like, I'm so fucking psyched for this. And then you go on the Saturday, in full costume at Mainline.
Exactly.
That's your fucking
weekend. There's
your weekend. Plug yourselfers.
And the 17th, I mean, the reason I was going to tie things in, Alex is my musical director for Acme Burlesque, which is another one of my billion projects.
Right.
A spinoff of Acme, Combustible Burlesque, is a newly launched company that my partner, Seska, and I have put together that we're doing this Saturday, the
17th is tomorrow, 18th, 19th.
Yeah, Saturday the 19th
there
at the Wiggle Room.
Crazy.
So come on down if you want some burlesque.
There's so much
he
shit.
He does everything and knows everyone. Shane Grinn.
He's like a musical Walter.
If you don't know me, add me on Facebook. I will argue you to the ground.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. Street Music MTL on
That's
Twitter.
Pretentious. No, just, I'm sorry.
Keith, come on.
Dude, I'm right here.
We almost made it through the whole episode.
Shit.
Come on.
All right. Thanks really much for coming out, Shane. That was great. This has been Go Plug Yourself. I'm Keith.
I'm Dad.
I'm Walter. Thanks a lot, Shane.
I'm Shane. Wicked. Thanks,
those sweet, sweet piano tunes you're listening to right now come courtesy of Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude. Oh, man, that was some great podcasting, wasn't it? Anyhow, be sure, as always, to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, add us on iTunes, buy our stuff, and basically try as hard as you can to make us happy in every single way possible. Of course, be sure to check back every day on 9to5.cc for comics on Wednesdays, podcasts on Thursdays, Scott or Sophie's art on Fridays, and seriously, we'll try as hard as we can to get Zombies and Loathing, Fuck Mondays, and Templars back as soon as we can. Thanks for listening, everyone.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you?